Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Gonna throw it long, right sideline, and it's gonna be intercepted. Intercepted by Timothy Strickland.
And they're an extra point away from tying the game. And penalty markers get thrown after the play. The kick is up, and it is no good!
Here we go, Sports Talk Mississippi, 4 o'clock hour with you. Richard Cross, Michael Borky, Brian Haydad, and now John Bond joining us as well. If it was on the phone, it would be on the Farm Bureau phone line, but he is in studio in Jackson, right across the glass from Michael Borky, and kind enough to spend a little time with us. JB, what's up, my man?
Oh, man, always look forward to it. You guys are always fun to hang out with.
You know, Haydad says Ole Miss people and state people can't like each other, can't be friends, and it. But I like you. I just can't help it.
Well, we're almost up on that 24-hour rule.
So a day from now, we have to not like each other for, what, 48 hours?
Correct. A day before and a day after. There you go. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's kept a lot of friendships together.
Probably not a bad plan. John got to the studio just a few minutes ago, and I texted him just to hang out and make himself at home, and he said there were not adequate refreshments to be able to make himself at home. So I'm sorry that we were not more hospitable. I was thinking earlier, John, I think in a lot of ways you were ahead of your time. Because, I mean, you were getting the NIL deals long before these guys today were getting them, weren't you?
Yeah, but not getting the dollars like they are. You know, it's I did a lot of stuff for free. I can tell you that it was a lot different then. But it was still you're getting out and you're getting in the community. So I guess you got some things out of it, and they did too. And it was you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours type deal. So it all worked out. Everything was good.
Everything was good.
John.
Hey, Dad, you look like you're about to talk.
Well, I was, and then you said something. See, we're getting into that 48-hour thing now. It's starting to creep in,
close.
Richard. John, you won two, you lost two.
Right.
So the glory of victory and the agony of defeat, to put it in those kind of announcements.
In the
terms.
Worst kind of ways.
Yeah. So which one stays with you more through the years?
The losses or the wins it's hard to forget any of them for me. You know, it's the way we lost, the two that we lost were just kind of unforgettable, you know, and then the two we won, that was pretty good too, especially my freshman year, winning the, you know, Sports Illustrated National Back of the Week and a record that I didn't even really know I had until Fitzgerald broke it, you know, a few years ago. So so they were all memorable in their own special way.
Let's walk through them, John. Let's start with your freshman year. You guys were ranked 17th in the country going in. I believe there was a win over Alabama in the mix that season, the 6-3 game. Good football team. Low-ish scoring game, 19-14. What stood out for you from the 1980 game?
You know, I'll tell you what, that the defense we had that year was just incredible. I mean, we had to score some points at times, you know, Miami, LSU, we had a few games we had to put some points on the board. But after that Southern game, after that Southern shellacking we took, man, it was like they strapped it on. They said we're going to win these things, the rest of these games, and that's kind of the way it ended up. So I always loved watching that, the defense, and you know, going against John Forcade, and the you know, him being, I think he was the, if I remember right, the total yards leader from the year before, and may have been that year. And the way they kind of shut him down, and another freshman over there, Billy Jackson, that kind of ended that game. It was always fun to watch that defense in 1980, and that game was no different than the rest. And Glenn Collins and Johnny Cooks and Tyrone Keys, I mean, the names just go on and on, and Larry Friday, and you know, all the time that they spent in the NFL, you knew you were with a special group of guys.
All right, so you guys ran a wishbone-based offense, a lot of running, a lot of option in there.
Right.
I'm assuming that Coach Ballard did not necessarily have you in a green jersey or a yellow jersey or a black jersey to keep you from getting hit in practice. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it's very accurate. In fact, you know, at the first of the year, I worked my way up the depth chart. And in fact, I was they recruited another quarterback that ran the wishbone, started all 4 years out of New Orleans, and I'd never run the wishbone. In fact, we had shotgun and we ran a pro set and I sprinted out and we ran the flat curl and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So I was up against a bunch of guys that had at least been in it at least 1 year and one guy that had run it 4 years. So working my way up the depth chart was great. And I'll never forget, I made it to number two and I thought, man, that's the greatest. Man, I had number two on the depth chart. This is fantastic. Then we go out there that Monday before Memphis State and I realize, uh-oh. Number two offense scrimmages number one defense.
Ooh.
Yeah, that was not fun. So I did everything I could to get to that number one spot so I could scrimmage the number two defense.
Did you ever have a head-on collision with Johnny Cooks?
Oh, yeah, had several with him and Glenn Collins and Ty and all those guys. I mean, it was wide open on Tuesdays and about half of Wednesdays. So Mondays we laid off a little bit, but Tuesdays and Wednesdays were wide open.
John, you know, on this show, every now and then I've been known to complain about officiating. Every now and then I'll do that. So I'm going to give you an open mic here. If you got anything you want to say about Dick Pace right this second, I'll let you have it.
Oh, my gosh. That is the worst call ever. Although I have seen some others this year.
All right, hold on now. What was the call? What are we talking about?
Oh, and 4K will swear up and down that the guy was killing him, the receiver, the whole way down, and he never touched him. I think – who was it? Johnson. Was it Johnson?
I think you're right, but I'm not – Yeah,
that I mean, just stepped around in front of the, you know, John threw the ball up in the end zone, and they were on about the 50, I guess, and he threw the ball up in the end zone, and KJ someone stepped in front of it. I mean, it was a clean interception. He caught the ball, fell on the ground, jumped up with the number one, you know, and was running off, and then here comes the flag, and they called pass interference, and that's when they moved it to the one, and the rest is history. So that's how we lost one, that first one, my sophomore year. And it was funny, that year we had we lost two games with two return – well, one a return touchdown and one a pass interference call in the end zone.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can talk about refs all day long.
I mean, it's really crazy that all these years later, you guys still do not come to the realization that it was the right call. I mean, sometimes these guys just get it right.
Well, yeah, sometimes, and sometimes they miss them. But they, you know what? In fact, the guy, and if I remember right, I believe he was involved in the Methodist Church in some kind of way. He was a preacher or something and felt really bad about that and wrote Coach Ballard a letter of apology later on.
That's what it is at Mississippi State. We always get the letter.
Tradition.
Exactly. We get the letter after the game. Exactly. Oh, sorry we messed up.
Yep. Because if I'm remembering all that right, that's the way that happened.
Was 82 a so 81 or 80, excuse me, crazy low scoring game.
Right.
82 or I'm sorry, my years are off. 80 low scoring game, tight till the end. Obviously you just described 81, tight till the end. Was 82 different?
A little bit, just simply because we had a really good offense that year. In fact, I think we held the most yards per game until, like, Dak in the Liberty Bowl, whenever that was. I think it was 2010. I mean, it was a really good offense. That was when Ken Hall and all those guys were seniors.
Yeah.
We had Danny Knight, Glenn Young outside, the two guys that I threw to. and then we had Michael Haddix, Danny Knight as a running back. We had about five guys, you know, running the ball back there. So we had a really good backfield, two guys that could catch and could fly, and some great guys up front. So we really moved the ball up and down the field that year.
Do you like the movie Tin Cup?
I do.
I'm reminded of the line in Tin Cup after one that we probably shouldn't say on the radio where he goes, "A gust from the gods."
Yeah.
1983, yeah. Perhaps a gust from the gods.
Yeah.
What was your vantage point? What was your perspective on the kick?
I was on our sidelines, which was, I guess, the south side of the stadium, because doesn't it face east and west?
Yes, it does. It's one of those strange ones where the end zones are east and west.
Yeah, so I guess we were on the south side, and when Artie hit it, you know, now, Artie had already kicked a 52-yarder that year, so it's not like he didn't have the leg strength. So we felt good about getting it down to, I think it was the 17, 18-yard line. And I felt, you know, really good about him putting it through the uprights. And it had been, I mean, it was, the storms were around because everybody was asking me in the huddle, you know, they're going to call the game? They're going to call the game? I said, don't worry about it. Let's just keep moving the football. And our sideline stood first because we thought it went through. And then when it landed back where we snapped it from, the other side started jumping up and down. So,
how long was the kick? I should know that.
It was only from like the 20. So it was like a 27-yarder or 37-yarder, 27-yarder. It may have been closer than that. It wasn't far at all.
So it was that significant of a wind gust.
Yes. Oh, it was incredible. And Glenn, it was calm.
We talked to David Kellum yesterday, voice of the Rebels, and he said he was at that game as a college student or a high school student at the time and said, same way you described it. He said, you know, Mississippi State fans went crazy and then stopped, and then Ole Miss fans went crazy. Yeah. And he was in the opposite end zone watching, and he said, it was dead center.
Oh, yeah, he nailed it.
And then it wasn't.
Yep.
More with John Bond when we continue on the Farm Bureau phone line. He is in our Jackson studio. We'll take a quick timeout and be right back. Series that began in 1901. And Tim was the winner for the trivia question. And we've never had this happen before, where a listener, Mike, who's been a longtime listener, says, hey, guys, I will send two tickets to somebody that can answer this trivia question. His trivia question was, name the seven cities that the Egg Bowl has been played in, and who is the only player to start a game for both Mississippi State and Ole Miss in the Egg Bowl. John Bond, do you know the answer to those questions?
I don't, and I'm curious about that. I think I remember something about a Tupelo game. Was there a Tupelo game? And then
there was
one on the coast or something. Was there, or is it
Oxford,
Hattiesburg, or
Starkville,
right,
Jackson, Tupelo, Columbus,
yeah, that's
Clarksdale, and Greenwood.
Wow.
That's
when they had to go to the fans.
I guess so. I mean, I guess Crumpton Stadium in Clarksdale. I don't know where they would have played in Greenwood at the time, but and then the only player, you know, Breck Tyler.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, I didn't know that.
Bob Tyler's son, Breck Tyler. Started for Ole Miss, and then when Bob became the coach at Mississippi State, he made the move as well.
Because I went, my official visit was to the Ole Miss-Mississippi State game at, and I guess it was 79. And, and Brett was playing for Ole Miss that game in 79. I think that's right.
Was it
80?
Well, I may have messed that up. So was it? Brett started out at Mississippi State Bob Tyler was the coach, and then when Bob was letting go, Brett transferred to Ole Miss.
That's correct, yes.
Okay. So the other way around. Good stuff. I always am fascinated, especially when we talk with former quarterbacks about current offenses. So when you look at the offense that Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss run right now, and you look at the offense that Mike Leach and Mississippi State run right now, which one would you be better in?
Oh, I think it would have been Lane's, just because of the what all the quarterback does. You know, it's I think the way Mike Leach described his offense was like it's a wishbone through the air because he distributes the ball to, and that's what we did. That's why, you know, my rushing yards were not near like a lot of these guys are these days, because we had five guys running the ball.
Yeah,
you know, so it was spread out, and that's why the receiving yards for, you know, one certain receiver won't be near as much, because you got five guys catching the ball. So it's just the same deal through the air. So, yeah, I think I would have moved the ball a little better in Lane's deal.
You know, it's really fascinating. We talked with John Darnell on Friday. He was with me in studio here in Oxford, and I asked him the exact same question. He's like, oh, without a doubt, it's Mike Leach's offense. He said, I mean, I ran it a little bit, he said, but I was way more comfortable standing in the pocket and throwing it and, you know, being accurate. Didn't have the biggest arm in the world, but, you know, pretty accurate. And so, I mean, it's all about skill set, right? It's all about the right fit.
It's exactly what it is. And they do such a great job of recruiting kids that can come and do what they need them to do. You know, that's the thing. You can go out and, you know, and Coach Leach had his eye on Will for years, you know, yeah. before he came to Mississippi State. So he knew exactly what he could do, and we're seeing the results now. You know, he's a great fit for that offense.
I'm curious what you think of Matt Corral and the way he plays the quarterback position.
He plays it just like I would, I think. I think he plays it hard-nosed and tough. He doesn't back up, and he loves the game. You can tell he has a passion for the game. And not to say that Will doesn't, but just, you know, he'll stick his face in there sometimes, maybe when he shouldn't. But
Well, it's funny. As you were saying that, I was thinking – 2018, now, you don't really want your quarterback taking a swing at a defensive player who's got his helmet on. That's pretty stupid.
Right.
But I bet John Bond watched that happen and said, I like that guy.
Something.
Maybe not in the 24-hour window, but otherwise.
Right. Yeah, well, I like the fact that he is not scared. And this is a game that you can't play scared. Not, like I said, I'm not saying Will's scared. I'm just saying, you know he ain't. There's no question he's ready to get in there and play football, and you know, sometimes it's hard for State fans to watch that kind of stuff, but when you look at it just as a purely a quarterback deal, that's the kind of stuff I like. I like to be in a part of the game, and not just the passing part of the game. I like to be part of the running part as well, you know, be a part of all facets of the game. And I loved holding for extra points. So
I hate, hear you, man.
Coming off.
Hey, that was the first way I ever got on the field. Extra points.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah. Hey, that's a tough job. Now I'm going to go ahead and tell you. That's a tough job. My very first play from scrimmage, it was up in the Liberty Bowl. You know, we were playing Memphis State back then. And Bill Bell, my center, who's still a great friend of mine to this day, had gotten in an altercation on Thursday night and had broken a couple of fingers on his hand. Mm-hmm. And he was a deep snapper, and he could rifle it. Well, his torts was off a little bit. He got a little high, and I had to jump straight up and stick it with one hand. And by the time I came back down, you know, you're supposed to holler fire, fire, fire. Well, this is my first play from, you know, scrimmage in college game. And so I didn't holler anything. I just, I caught it and came back down. But, you know, I had to leap off the ground. I came back down, boom, put it on the tee. Well, the kicker was already standing there with his leg still back, you know. And then when I put it down, he just went, poop, and it barely made it over the line of scrimmage. It was the dangerous thing I've ever seen in my life.
Wow.
John, you know, we think about Mississippi State. You know, you made your fame running the football out of the quarterback position. And, you know, guys like Don Smith and you know, Dak even, and of course Nick Fitzgerald. As a Mississippi State guy who's your whole life, does it still blow your mind to watch this team throw the ball 50, 60 times a game?
Oh, yeah, it does.
I can't get hold of it.
You know, and here's the thing, too, is everybody was talking about, you know, he could walk out and in 5 minutes find a running back in the state of Mississippi. You know, I mean, their running backs are everywhere. Mm-hmm. Well, so are receivers. We got some good receivers around here. And now that you're throwing the football all the time and you know that you're going to be able to catch some balls, that's when they're going to start coming. The running backs came because we ran the ball. The receivers will come because we're throwing the ball. And the offensive line will come. It's just like somebody asked me, it's been a couple of years, but do you think the wishbone, the triple option in some form or fashion would work? And I said, well, yeah. But the thing is, you can't get the guys to come run it. Because they're thinking about, you know, down the road, playing in the NFL, catching footballs, and offensive linemen are thinking about pass blocking. They're not thinking about coming off the ball. So you won't be able to get the athletes you need to come run it.
Yeah.
And you've got a quarterback now at St. Joe who is going to pick up some interest. You know, which of these two offenses, if he were to get offers, would fit better?
Lanes, without a doubt. Lanes. No
now, could
question.
could you push him towards that?
Maybe.
I got John and I. You know, we got a lot in common, but the St. Joe St. Aloysius thing, I can't.
Oh yeah, that's
the
right.
One thing.
You're St. Al guy. Yeah.
That's right. I can't ever get past it.
Yeah.
John, let me ask you this: as we kind of go down the quarterback road, when you look at Will Rogers' development and his level of comfort, is there anything that stands out for you from where he is now, from where he was a year ago at this time?
Oh, yeah. Well, you can see the difference in the first of the year and in different games. You know, I think that's why we were kind of sputtering offensively at times. It's just because he hadn't seen enough and hadn't done enough. Now everybody's dropping, you know, dropping eight, rushing three, and I think he's kind of got the gist of it. You know, he understands where people are going and what they're doing. I mean, you got eight guys that are dropping back. There's only so many places they can go. Yeah. So, and you know, you're going to have plenty of time. So that thing is kind of that bell doesn't go off quite as soon anymore. It all starts to gel. Well, it's just like the triple option. Things happened a lot faster and a lot closer to the line of scrimmage. And, you stick the ball back and you can't put your eyes on the fullback. You got to put it on a defensive end because he's charging. And you can get to where you can see that, well, he's not going to be able to get that fullback at that angle. You know, or he's not, like Will's probably saying, well, he's not going to be able to make a pick from that angle where he's standing. I can get this ball in there. So things like that start to click and start to come into view a little bit better and a lot quicker and easier.
Hey, only about 30 seconds or so left.
I won't make it.
If the there's so many ways I could have gone with that. I just won't. If the forecast turns out to be true and we're playing this game in the mid 40s with a north wind and some rain, who does it affect most?
Wow. Well, it affects Mississippi State mostly on offense. But how they handle it is going to be the question.
So is that like a mindset thing more than the physical piece?
A lot of it is the way they can get those balls dry and in and out now. And I don't think that's that much of a big deal. Now, throwing the ball down the field will be a big deal.
Yeah.
Especially if that wind blows like they're talking about.
Man, you are the best. Wish you and your family happy Thanksgiving. Can't tell you enough how much we appreciate your time.
Man, yeah. Thank you all. Go Dawgs.
John Bond. Quarterback at Mississippi State, 80, 81, 82, and 83. 2-2 in the Egg Bowl. We'll be back.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.